Our fourth session with Dr. Cyril Wecht. This is Judy Rubenstein and Shirley Stolzer. Dr. Wecht, you've been involved in so many famous cases around here and throughout the country, and we were hoping this morning that you might share some of the most interesting cases with us and most significant of your career.
Well, you know, to save time insofar as just identifying them, I can I can even have the table of contents Xerox for you from my two books, Cause of Death and Grave Secrets. Mm-hmm. Although some of the titles, I guess, are plays on, you know, words for sex appeal, literary sex appeal. I don't tell you the name of the case, but you'll see President John F. Kennedy, Robert Kennedy assassinations, talking about the book now, and Mary Jo Kopechne, Sonny von Bülow, Klaus von Bülow case, Gene Harris, Dr. Herman Tarnow case, Captain Jeffrey McDonald, the Green Beret, triple homicide case, Elvis Presley, O.J. Simpson, Vincent Foster, Waco Branch Davidian, Black Panther shootout in Chicago many years ago. And more recently, some cases. I've just been consulted by news media, and they want me to continue to consult with them concerning the this little girl in Colorado who was found murdered in her home. And I've been consulted. Case of the teenagers in Delaware, New Jersey, Harley Grossberg matter. Then
the other is John Bennett.
Yeah, that's her name. Yeah. And when I say consultant, you know, by various, some of them are directly by the attorneys, sometimes by government agencies, sometimes by news media. Mm-hmm. You know, formal basis. You know, so. Not just, you know, where you get a casual call or something like that. And then there are other cases which are very dramatic and which have been quite famous, perhaps more on a regional basis with some national attention too, but which are not as well known. Well, like, for example, take our Gamage case in Pittsburgh. You know, that case is nationally known.
Johnny Gamage.
Johnny Gamage. And then we have the recent case of the Envoy Baglier. And there's a case that's going to get a lot of attention. It's already been covered in some national publications northeast. It'll go to trial this year. Dr. Scher, S-C-H-E-R, is charged with killing his closest friend, attorney Dylan, D-I-L-O-N, about 21 years ago in northeastern Pennsylvania. It's a romantic triangle type situation. Former attorney's wife, 1 year after his death, became the doctor's wife. That's going to be a very interesting case. And
are you supposed to hear?
Then recently was consulted by an agency, Scher, S-C-H-E-R, S-C-H-E-R, Scher, Dr. Scher. And just reviewed materials. I'm going to be interviewed next week. They're coming on Solved Mysteries. And Kurt Cobain, K-U-R-T, C-O-B-A-I-N, I think you know what rock star, I'm sure they really call him. And some investigators think that he was actually murdered, and his wife may have ordered the murder. The famous Courtney Love.
Love? Wow.
So, you know, these are numbers. Many of the, you know, major.
Mm-hmm. What are the elements in these cases that want to make you become involved?
Well, I of course am contacted. I don't contact these people. So, what you mean? What makes me well
the
want
trash.
To be? I mean, what? Well, first of all, it's in my field of forensic pathology, uh-huh. so that's number one. Number two, they're interesting and challenging, controversial, and the celebrity status of one or more of the people, the socioeconomic level, the social, political, governmental prominence, and so on, whatever it may be, that you usually find one or more of those elements in these cases that make them stand out within that particular category. Many of these cases are not unique. For example, we'll take O.J. Simpson. When you get right down to it, there's nothing unique about a double murder in America. I'd like to have a $100 bill in my pocket right now for every double homicide that will occur in America uh-huh. this year, and so on. What makes it unique is yeah. because it's O.J. Simpson, right? And so you know, these are the things that make the cases appealing. The intellectual challenge, the controversial nature, the complex issues, the impact of seemingly extraneous factors on the substantive issues. In other words, how does it play out through the news media? How do people perceive it? How do other people get involved? The district attorneys, private attorneys, major news media, and so on. They lend a whole additional life to the mm-hmm. basic element of the mm-hmm. case, whatever it may be, a murder or an mm-hmm. attempted murder or so on. That's what makes these cases very special. And, you know, obviously it's exciting to be involved uh-huh. in matters like that.
Might you refuse a case like
that?
Well,
sure. I can refuse any case I want to, uh-huh. other than those that come under my own jurisdiction. But I do consultations. Most of these I have been paid for my professional services, but some have not involved payment where I perhaps dealt, you know, with the mm-hmm. news media. But you know, I look upon them as professional matters. It's not done in a superficial dilettante way or as a casual mm-hmm. Detached observer. Mm-hmm. And I think it's best that way, not because you make that much money. In fact, some of them surprisingly wind up paying a lot less per hour spent than cases that one never hears about and so on. It's not because of the money, but it's better to have a professional involvement and, you know, not to be perceived as someone who is just doing it for publicity or doing it because you have a cause to pursue or a bias or something like that. Mm-hmm. You know, involved as a professional.
Also, credit to you that yeah. they asked you.
Well,
absolutely.
That's
no question.
I'm contacted because people have, you know, either worked with me in the past or uh-huh. heard my name from somebody or so on. And I just got a call the other day from America's Most Wanted television program. They want me to come up with some cases for them of unsolved murders mm-hmm. and so on. I've worked in the past with Unsolved Mysteries television program. They've consulted me from time to time on cases. That's why they call me and send me materials now. And it's Kurt Cobain. Mm-hmm. And then another major newspaper contacted me on this little girl case from Colorado, and they want me to continue to work with them. They have photographs and so on for analysis and commentary, mm-hmm. et cetera. Mm-hmm.
Obviously, one of the most famous was your opinions on President Kennedy. Could you, in a few minutes, give us some thoughts of that,
well,
or even thoughts this many
that.
Years
very,
later?
Well, very quickly. Well, it doesn't. Uh-huh. It's not complicated for me to talk about because of the passage of 33 years. It's just that there's
wow.
so much. I'd be happy to. Well, sure. Since the death, 33 years plus now. I'd be happy to give you a few articles that I have written and published on this for your own interest, if you like. The bottom line is that John Kennedy's assassination unquestionably was a conspiracy because there were two shooters. Single bullet theory, which is the sine qua non of the Warren Commission report's conclusion is that Oswald was a sole shooter is total nonsense, absolutely scientifically untenable and indefensible. I'm going to give each of you a copy of my previous book. I'm sorry I don't have the new one, but I'm going to give each of you a copy.
Cause of Death?
Or do you already have it?
No.
And
that would be
that will, you know, just for yourselves. Uh-huh. And then you'll read some of my thoughts and opinions regarding John Kennedy Robert Kennedy. But that's the bottom line. And I continue to be involved in that in many ways. I receive letters, calls from people all over and from abroad. I'm chairman of the national organization committee, coalition on political assassinations. We formed about 3 years ago. We've had some excellent national programs in Washington, D.C. Some very good, solid people, a lot of physicians, attorneys, college professors, and many others who continue to be serious JFK assassination researcher critics. The Assassination Records and Review Board, ARRB, is continuing with its work, comprised of 7 very prominent academic historical scholars appointed by President Clinton pursuant to a congressional act passed in October of 92. And they have met with us, our COPA group, sought our input and assistance, et cetera. And they continue to locate identify and disclose thousands and thousands of documents which heretofore have been held back by the FBI, CIA, Office of Naval Intelligence, and other secret spy organizations in the United States government. So by no means have we come to the end of this trail. It's still frustrating that we can't get into court. If we ever could, then there's no question whatsoever in my mind that the any jury would immediately find that the Warren Commission report is absurd. The fact of the matter is that every national survey taken by the national news media, who remain for the most part apologists for the Warren Commission, so they're not biased in favor of the critics, they're strongly biased in favor of the government. They, the Washington Post, Newsweek, AP, New York Times, their polls repeatedly over the past 30 years have demonstrated, in fact, amazingly, with an increasing percentage, it's now up to about 85 to 90% of the American public does not accept the Warren Commission report.
Really?
That's their polls, not polls from the critics. So what I'm saying is that people, without really knowing all the facts and details, they just have, a basic degree of common sense and intuition and feeling and so on and so forth. Just think, if they came to know more, not that these are being, the facts are secret, but not that many people, percentage-wise, not that many people go out, get books and study and so on.
Right.
If they learn more about the facts and so on, I have no doubt, the figure would go over 90%. So we've already won the battle, so to speak, in terms of the American public. Not to mention, by the way, the public around the world. I've spoken on JFK in China, Australia, Africa, Israel, Europe, everywhere. I mean, I haven't done any polling, what for, but I can tell you among the people who would be the most difficult to persuade, prominent, distinguished, experienced forensic scientists and so on, among them, it's rare to find anybody who believes the Warren Commission report in anywhere else in the world. Truly rare. I mean that. I don't know if I've found any, but I'm sure there's an exception here or there. People, the more removed they are, the less emotional need they may have for patriotic chauvinism to defend the United States government. So the less they have of that, the more willing and apt they are to say, hey, this is garbage, this is sheer nonsense. There's still some Americans that just don't want to. How could our government lie to us on something like this? How could they cover it up and so on? Cover-ups, that's a whole other matter, how easy it is to cover up things.
How does the Kennedy family respond to the continued...
Well, that's one of the sad things. It's a question that's always answered, always asked. What about the Kennedy family? And of course, I can't speak for the Kennedy family. Personally, I find it difficult to explain and very, very sad, and if I were them, very embarrassing. Here, look at the two Kennedy children, both intelligent attorneys and so on. Even the people who defend ultimately the Warren Commission, like some of my colleagues in forensic pathology, some of the group, even they have raised many questions and express many criticisms, and so on. And for the Kennedy family, the children, not to ever, express anything. You will not find anybody who just says everything was okay, I've got no questions, and so on. You'll find people say, well, I think the Warren Commission ultimately got the right conclusion, but boy, how do they do this, and why do they fail to do that, and so on. So, well, shouldn't we be getting a lot of this, from the Kennedy family, et cetera. The bottom line is this: don't arrive at an opinion and conclusion and judgment about the Warren Commission report and the Kennedy assassination based upon the non-responsiveness of the Kennedys. If you want to arrive at any judgment and conclusions, then do so about the Kennedys based upon their non-responsiveness. In other words, you just turn that around. So to speak.
You were one of the early ones early on.
Yes, I was. It started off actually in the late fall of 64 when the Warren Commission report was released in preparing for a talk to be given at the annual meeting of the American Academy of Forensic Sciences in February 65. It was held in Chicago. And I was asked to represent the pathology section in this day-long plenary session, the different sections of the Academy. So I went to the Carnegie Library here in Pittsburgh to the 26 volumes, which incidentally was released without an index. And then my talk in February, and that's what started it all. After that, the formal points of contact along the way, I was consulted by Life magazine, went to New York City to study the Zapruder film, which they had purchased from Abraham Zapruder. Then I was consulted by District Attorney Jim Garrison from New Orleans in the Clay Shaw case, and I testified before a federal judge in Washington, D.C. in 68 in an attempt to gain access to the autopsy materials. Then in 72, I was the first non-government forensic pathologist finally given permission to go in and study the autopsy materials. And I was the one who disclosed the fact that the president's brain is missing, and remains missing, by the way. And in 74, I testified before the Rockefeller Commission. It was looking into this. Then in 78, 79, I was a member of the forensic pathology panel of the House Select Committee on Assassinations, one of nine. And I testified before the United States Congress, that congressional committee in 78 in D.C., and then I was a technical advisor to Oliver Stone in the movie JFK. So I have testified formally three times under oath in this case. I've written quite a lot about it, and I have, I've talked without, I'm sure, without exaggeration. It's got to be over 32 years. I would say probably more than 1,000 times, ranging from places like Harvard Law School and Yale Medical School to national organizations, to international meetings and groups, to local organizations. organizations. It might be a synagogue or a church group or a Rotary or Lions. You know, I mean, so it's varied. It's spanned the spectrum because everybody's interested in this case and everybody remains interested in it.
The most frustrating thing this many years later is still then that...
Well, we can't get the case reopened because despite the fact that we've got 85% of the American public with us, we don't have the legal vehicle, you know. I mean, to win a PR battle is one thing, but then, you know, what do you do with it? And we are not in a position to charge somebody. I say we, I mean, you know, the critic researchers or even 85% of the American public. It's up to the officials, and the problem is that the official governmental apparatus refuses to make a move, and so therefore, you know, all of this, by no means meaningless or unimportant, is frustratingly incomplete because we are not in charge of the government apparatus.
So that they're obviously... have something to cover up, or
well, sure, they cover up as a conspiracy. It was a domestic conspiracy. I think it involved some people who had high-level contacts. I think the CIA was definitely involved. I don't mean the official level of the person who was in charge, but I mean former agents or people who had input or so on. It's a small number. I don't think there are more than 3 to 6 people who knew everything that was going to happen, and then they just had different people do different things before, during, and after, and so on. And then, you know, now it's become so complex. It's like, you know, maybe a whole. It's like a huge tree. The roots keep going out, and after years and years and years, not only do they become long and tentacled, but they begin to intertwine with the roots of maybe 100 other trees, and then to try to, you know, trace it back. And if you fear for the safety, integrity of that particular tree, then you don't want to get in there and start cutting off and tracing branches because you may wind up destroying the tree. That's a maybe not a very good metaphor, but it'll give you an idea of what's involved. You know, who's going to open this up at the government level? Who's going to benefit? Whether it's Clinton now or previous presidents, Reagan, Bush, and Carter, what advantage is there to them, you know, politically?
Do you have the feeling that possibly also that the murder of Robert Kennedy was,
I think that was
tied in,
yes,
and
I do.
Possibly
you
even
that,
Martin
yeah.
Luther King?
Yes, yes. They're not big, simple, straightforward cases.
Right.
Oh, by the way, I was consulted now, too, in that. In fact, I got a call. I was in Jamaica just recently, and a couple weeks ago, they called me, James Earl Ray's attorneys, asking me to come on up to do the autopsy. He was in a coma. They thought they were supposed to die right away. He pulled out of it.
Pulled
out of it. But he's got a seriously damaged liver, and doesn't seem to be, for whatever reason, a candidate for a liver transplant. So he's going to die from that sooner or later, and they want me to do the autopsy on him.
What would that might... What
well,
might
it's not going to relate directly to Martin Luther King, but they just want to make sure that you know, everything's in order. And so on. You know, there's no direct relationship, of course. But to get a perspective on his ailments and so on, it could have just you know, a little bit of indirect bearing on maybe what his medical condition might have been, you know, back then, and so on and so forth, and how he might have been enticed into something. Who knows? But in any event, it's they just don't trust. Officials to give them a good, thorough account.
No, just
letter.
If I had a death in my family, I would want to find out all that I could as to how that person in my family was assassinated.
Yes, I agree,
I
of course.
I can't imagine that they wouldn't want to get to the bottom of this, no matter how sordid the bottom might
yes.
be.
Well, I agree with what you just said, but... if you are involved with a family that has been politically prominent, involved maybe with all kinds of things and so on, just stop and think for a moment. You could be influenced unquestionably in any one of several ways, ranging from outright threats to old close friends who wave the flag and tell you it's not good for America, it's not going to be good for you, and so on. I think one of the factors in the Kennedy situation to begin with, although it did not do them any good, but they knew that a lot of stuff, that everything within would come out on Kennedy, which we now have come to know about all of his romantic adventures and bringing women into the White House, and a lot of the political games and so on. You know, I mean, I admired Kennedy a lot, voted for him, worked for him, and so on. But you know, the people who make him out to be a saint, you know, to just read a lot of things. For example, even quite indirectly and quite tangentially, in the book I'm reading now, Anthony Summers on J. Edgar Hoover, refers to the business about Senator McCarthy. And the one senator that refused to vote against McCarthy, finally with the vote of censure, was Kennedy. And the way he got out of it was he had just been operated on, and he could have been taken in. And this is all documented. He could have recorded his vote, and because of his father's entanglement and the Irish Catholic relationship and so on, and his father had been a defender, a friend of Joe McCarthy, John Kennedy did not cast a vote for that censure. I mean, that's just, you know, one. But getting back to the two, so you know, I think that, you know, a lot of it was, you know, what are you going to get into this and so on, and let it. Well, these things have come out anyway, but time blunts things, and it would have been different had they all come out at that time.
Yeah, the Kennedy Women, which I read, gives a whole different perspective on the Kennedy family than anything the newspapers ever gave
including,
out.
Including Jacqueline Kennedy, who had a couple of affairs, too. So. Sure. And, you know, it doesn't mean anything to me. I don't care. The point is, is one example of, you say, you know, what why wouldn't families move to do things and so on? There's a lot of skeletons in the closet, right? Why rattle them?
Since this will be in the library archives also, I think it's interesting to hear some of the views many years later. I think that's what's useful, you know, for us. And on a lighter note, although I don't mean necessarily lighter, any thoughts on Elvis all this many years later?
Well, you'll read it in here. Well, the thoughts today are those expressed in the book. Elvis Presley did not die of heart disease. He died as a result of a combined drug overdose, which he did not take suicidally. He had had these things prescribed for him by his friend, this Dr. Nicopoulos, good old Dr. Nick, who wrote a prescription for anything that Elvis wanted, uppers, downers, tranquilizers. He had 12 central nervous system depressant drugs in his system when he died, painkillers, tranquilizers, and sedatives. He died on the toilet where he spent a good part of his day. His bowel was obstructed from all of these medications. And there was a cover-up. The cover-up is not to protect a person. The cover-up was to protect an industry, a billion-dollar industry. Elvis Presley is the biggest industry in Tennessee, one of the biggest industries in America. You know, the one out of every 12 adult Americans has Elvis Presley memorabilia of some kind?
Really?
One out of 12. And they didn't want anything to blemish, tarnish that image. So you have them dying of heart problems. There's no question about it. That's how a lot of times these things happen for cover-ups. Sometimes the reason may be, you know, by itself, reasonable, not offensive, or so on. Mm-hmm. But the point is that doesn't make it any less unethical, any less immoral, any less illegal.
Mm-hmm.
Hello.
Since the big case now is the O.J. Simpson case, I'm not sure if it would be appropriate for you to comment.
No, I have no problem in commenting. You'll read, if you get, I'm sorry I don't have a copy of that book, Grave Secrets. Okay. It's the lead chapter in that new book that came out in October.
Can we give you our addresses?
uh, you know, I think most probably he is guilty, but I think there's a couple things to consider. And one is that there may have been a second person involved. That's a very strong likelihood. And two, even if he is guilty, that doesn't mean that the police did not do some of the things that they have been accused of doing to make it a stronger case against him. Mm-hmm. And you cannot overlook conflicting testimony that has been given by very prominent forensic scientists, the people that I, good friends of mine, but who are top-notch in their field, Henry Lee in criminalistics, Michael Bodden in forensic pathology, Fred Reeders in forensic toxicology, Herbert McDonald, you see all those names, well, the other chapter, in blood spatter evidence and DNA expert. So, you know, there are some questions that can be legitimately raised. It's not, you know, the open and shut case that the majority of the white community believes.
Mm-hmm.
But I think in this case, by the way, the current civil case, I think there's going to be a big verdict, probably in the seven figures against it. But it's going to be meaningless. I don't think they're going to collect any money.
It's interesting that I work at Jubilee Kitchen for homeless, and some of the black women have said to me, how did they ever not convict him? A man who beat his wife, you see, they're used to.
Yeah. Well, that's right. But, of course, prosecutors thought that they'd get that kind of reaction, too, when they selected the jury and they looked for black women, but it did not work out that way because they were all, of course, very, very, very offended by all of the racist stuff that came out regarding Mark Furman, and I think quite rightfully so.